Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host of Women Who Lead Radio, and with me today, I'm very excited, our leading lady today is a fabulous author. I want to introduce Joni Connell, who is the president of Flexible Work Solutions. She's a leadership coach. She is an organizational development consultant. More than that, and something I'm right in the middle of enjoying right now, is she's the author of Flying Without a Helicopter, Steps to Make It in the Real World of Work. So welcome, Joni, and say hello to all of our listeners on a Friday afternoon.
Hi, hello. It's great to be here.
I know it's always hard to say that where you're like, oh, hello, everyone. I don't know you. But anyway, just, you know, we'll go with that one. So everyone's waving back virtually. We'll go with that one. But welcome, welcome, welcome to our show. And I think I shared with you right before we went live that I'm like, I'm delving into your book. And I was reading part of the introduction and some of your stories about being a parent and, you know, what you've seen with today's millennial generation and some of the challenges that are out there with that of what to expect for the future of women in the workplace. So I would love to hear from you. Just give a little overview about your book and what was your inspiration for coming up with Flying Without a Helicopter and How to Prepare Young People for Work and Life.
Well, sure. I'll tell you, the inspiration came from the workplace. I was coaching executives and working with people in organizations and getting so many complaints about the younger generation of people coming into the workplace and the challenges they were having. And a few things came up about not being as resilient or able to take feedback or deal with mistakes, and also not being as independent, needing so much more instruction and what they would say, hand-holding and taking care of them. And at the same time, I had a young child, and I saw the differences in parenting that had come up over this next generation, and also in the schools, the differences in schools. And I saw that parents were hovering over their kids so much more, like helicopters. We have all heard of helicopter parenting. And what the implications were of that, that the kids were having their parents do things for them. They were, you know, navigating through the school system, talking to the teachers, setting things up so that the kids didn't have to deal with it, solving the problems for the kids, calling up to make sure that nobody would hurt their feelings, and making things happen, and seeing like, well, no wonder these kids aren't learning some of these skills. They're not learning how to be tough and make mistakes and deal with hardship. They're not learning how to make decisions on their own and communicate to their teachers effectively and develop those kind of things. And that's what happens when they get to the workplace. We're focusing so much on academic success today that we're forgetting about some of those life skills, and we can see it when they get to work. That's really what inspired me. It's the combination of the two. Yeah.
I think it's so timely. You know, one of the things, because we deal with women, you know, in the workplace and women leaders and women business owners and in our association, and I have to say always the subject of the battle of the generations. You know, the 50-something, the 60-somethings are saying, here's what drives me that house crazy about the 20 or 30-somethings, and then I'll hear it from young women as well. You know, that, you know, they're frustrated too with this is the old way. It's like there's a different way to do things. So I'm kind of curious, because to me, one of the biggest things that just continues for something that I see is just the relationship skills are just, I mean, seriously, in my mind, lacking the communication, the, you know, I have to tell one little quick story, and I would just love your thoughts on kind of the relationship part, because I had an employee quite a few years ago, and there were a new staff person on board, And I remember that I said, you know, please send an email to our client, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I happened to be copied on the email, and the email was, you know, that she started out with was, how are you today, question mark, and guess how R and U were spelled. And it was as if she texted it, and it was an email to a client. And I went, oh, no, 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 no. You know, so it was one of those things that I went, let's have a conversation. Let's really talk about how we do things here. And this is not okay, you know, for a business email. But, you know, it's those kinds of things that they're just, I see, totally not acclimated to the world of work. And I was curious what your thoughts are on just the whole thing about business and relationships and the fact that social media and brevity of conversation.
Yeah, well,
how
absolutely.
They've literally grown up.
Yeah, no, they've grown up texting each other and being a lot more casual in the interactions and finding that the workplace is more formal and also trying to change that. The workplace has become less formal over time as well. So we are adapting a little bit to the newer ways. At the same time, we have to be respectful and communicative, and we're dealing with people across the globe who may not understand little acronyms and memes and things like that and shortcuts on the texting. What's happening is that two things are going on. The technology is really impacting the way people are brought up and the communication skills. And that happens in terms of ability to write, but also to interact face-to-face with people. Because when you're not used to that, when you have those screens protecting you from having to deal with difficult situations or having to say something diplomatically that you might just write out in a scathing kind of way on the screens, that can be another effect too. So the technology is a really important factor. And the other factor is just that, like I said, when either the parents are doing this for them and the kids aren't learning those skills, or they're in school and they're not learning the skills because they're working on multiple choice tests instead of focusing on the writing, you know, and getting passed on as papers getting A's without necessarily having all of the grammar correct, things like that. These are the kind of things that contribute to people not being able to communicate when they grow up and enter the workplace.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I think a lot of our listeners, you know, I mean, twofold. I think this is such a double, you know, a great opportunity on both sides of your message, which one is a lot of our listeners are female leaders. It's like they either are corporate women or they also own businesses. And I'm curious what your message would be, you know, how do some of, like, today's leaders, millennials in the workplace, what would be some of your recommendations if, you know, I mean, obviously we're going to tell people where to get your book and all that, so I'm excited about that. But what would be the message to, I mean, current leaders that are in the workplace and they're finding that here's some of these millennials that lack these skills? I mean, are you going to recommend training? Is it that they have to deal with them one-on-one, or is it just a hopeless cause, which I hope is not the case? What's
a
leader to do?
It's
frustrating.
Yeah. Right.
What can they do?
Well, I guess a couple of things come up for me, and that is that there's always generational differences. Every generation comes in the workplace and they have differences from previous generations. I think we're dealing with a pretty big clash right now for a number of reasons, which we've already talked about. But one of the things that people in the workplace, or leaders can do, especially women leaders, is really try to understand the differences and work with the younger generation of people to help them understand the generational differences too. If people understand where each other is coming from, then they can really learn how to work more effectively with each other and appreciate what they both bring to the table and not just see it as deficiencies. They can say, hey, you have something else that I don't have, a different perspective, and we can work together. Another one is, as you said, training. Finding out where some of the gaps are that people have and focusing in on getting these people those skills. Training would be one way, development, or having managers realize how they need to get these people more independent and communicative, and that would be role modeling, coaching, mentoring, training, those kinds of development methods on particular skills.
Well, you know, I love that, but I have to say, again, just interacting with females in the, you know, kind of business environment, over and over I hear with millennials specifically, recognize or feel that it's like they're lacking in communication skills. So that's one thing. I think the second thing, too, is if somebody doesn't recognize that there are, let's just say, holes in their Swiss cheese from a skill standpoint, you know, how do you, you know, they don't communicate, they don't open up. These are some of the things I hear from some of my colleagues. And in some cases, I see that. Now, they're really sophisticated on social media, and I will publicly share that I just have been amazed at how much I've learned from millennial women, you know, within our association, because they're so sophisticated on social media, and I crave that, because that's the hole in my Swiss cheese, is that social media expertise. But if somebody feels that they're not missing anything in that area, it's like, to me, it's like I look at it as an employer. Wouldn't you want to adapt your skills to the current employer? But I see a lot of these millennials that they're like, they dig their heels in. They're like, no, I'm, you know, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. So I'm curious, any thoughts on that? Because that's what I hear from some of the women leaders that I interact with.
Yeah, you'll find a section in my book that deals with this issue, and that is, the self-esteem movement has really brought it to the point where we've tried to increase children's self-esteem and protect their self-esteem by praising them so much and telling them how wonderful and special they are, giving them trophies, you know, for being on the team, that they start to believe that they are perfect, right? The grade inflation has gone up tremendously over the last decade or two. And you can look at the research on that, you know, what percentage of people get A's now in school? It's like up to 45% rather than just the top, you know, 15%, things like that. So people are being used to told that they're perfect, they're great, they're getting an A. And so they understand that to be that it's good enough. And the problem is that they haven't gotten honest feedback, I think, along the way. It's been really hard. And when you're growing up and people are telling you everything is great, it's perfect, and you are perfect, and everything's, everything is wonderful and everything is awesome. I don't know if you've seen the Lego movie, but, you know, that this is going on, then they don't understand that they have gaps. And that's the thing that leaders need to be able to very gently get across. Because believe me, it's not good to suddenly hear that what you thought was great is not so great anymore. So it's a way of communicating with folks who may have not gotten that feedback and letting them know where the deficiencies are, the gaps are, and what needs to change, why it needs to change, and how they can do that.
I like that. You know, and I do think I hear from parents, you know, because we're in a women's group, and so we hear a lot of the angst of parents that it's just gotten so competitive. It's almost like, you know, parents are looking for ways to be able to help their kids advance because they have to be in line with what's out there. I mean, what are your thoughts with that? Where as a parent, you do want to have, you know, I mean, like the whole thing of winning and losing, there's winners, and sometimes you're not always going to win, right? We know that. And so kids are being brought up very differently now. But when you look at it from a competitive standpoint, how does a parent compete in that arena? You know, there's just so much there of pressure for parents to, you know, emulate and act on some of these competitive behaviors to get their kids' grades up, you know?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. And the pushback I often get is if I don't hover over them and helicopter and push them to do all these things and get all A's, then they're going to be left behind. And that is the pushback. That's a real concern. And what I would say in response to that is there are a couple things to think about. One is, what kind of skills do you want your kids to have? You know, when they get the all A's and they have the academic skills, yet they get a job and they don't know how to live on their own and they move back home, you know, is that where you want them to be because they're not able to be independent, you know? You want them to get into this one school that you believe is the right place to be, and then they get into that school and they become depressed, burned out, in crisis mode, going to college counselors because they can't handle that stress and on their own, you know, is that what you want to happen? And I think those are the kind of
risks that we take by pushing them so hard and making them stand up to be these perfect people with these perfect grades. We're seeing the numbers of people who are, especially women, actually, this is a real concern for women, who are burning out at really young ages. We have high schoolers who are having crises and burning out. We have kids in high school who are committing suicide. We've got many problems in college. If you look at the numbers of people who are going in to get help and also medication for depression, we've got many more people doing that. And then we have the 20-somethings, and this is also for women especially, who've been out there, promised everything. They get out there, find it's really tough, and they don't have those life skills to succeed, that they have what people are calling like the quarter life crisis now. You know, they're in their 20s burning out. So those are the kind of things that are the risks of pushing so hard. You know, maybe the kids can take it. Some kids are really able to handle that kind of stress, but some, you know, it takes its toll and you have to be careful.
Right. Can we address, you know, for some conversation, just for some of our female millennials, our up and rising women leaders that are listening, or we might know a woman leader, which I hope everyone will get a copy of your book. And Jody, can you share, I mean, your book is Flying Without a Helicopter, How to Prepare Young People for Work and Life. Where would you like people to contact you if they want to get your book, on Amazon, or how do you want people to reach you and obviously get a copy of your book?
Yeah, well, the book has its own website. It's called flyingwithout.com, and that'll direct you to Amazon and all the other places where it is available on electronic form, you know, in Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and you can go to your local bookstore and ask for it as well. But
cool.
flyingwithout.com is the website.
Flywithout.com, correct?
Flyingwithout.com.
Flying. Okay, forgive me. I just want to make sure. We'll bring it up again, but I want to pull out some of the elements of your book. So I know one big section of your book talked about, you know, building resilience, and, you know, kind of curious for our up-and-coming female professionals, or if we know any, what are some suggestions or tips you would have for young professional women, you know, on the resilience factor? What's missing and what can they do as far as a couple of tips or suggestions?
Well, definitely. What people need to do to build resilience is, sadly, to go through hardships and make mistakes. And there are ways you can do that that are less risky than other ways and have less of an impact or a problem about it. Start out small. Find little risks that you're willing to take and failures that you could make along the way. Get yourself in a situation at work where you're working with a manager or a leader who respects people who try and learn from mistakes that they make, not where they're punished for making mistakes. This is the way of the workplace, and I think in a lot of organizations now, where people want their folks to learn instead of be punished for making mistakes. So starting out small and learning how to make the decisions along the way and thinking about the kinds of concerns that would be let's see what would happen in the future if you did this or if you did that, what kinds of consequences you could run into, and talking with people who do that very well and learning how they do their thinking and their decision-making and their planning. Those are the kind of things that people need to do right now to be stronger and more resilient people by making some of those mistakes and bouncing back up in the meantime to be positive.
And that's cool. You know, I'm curious, though, if somebody has that mindset where they've grown up and they've excelled at everything, it's like if you were, you know, if we have a woman who's listening, you know, that's starting out and they're thinking, well, you know, it's got to be perfect. It's like it always has been. How do you kind of push through that, knowing that it's a great suggestion, but I'm thinking, man, wouldn't that be very difficult if you've grown up entirely with the idea that things have to be perfect? I mean, the stress is on these women so much, you know, to be perfect on so many levels because that's how they've been brought up. How do you change that and then try to focus on, you know, almost failing forward, so to speak, which is another great book, by the way.
Yeah, really, failing forward. Well, you know, there's a lot of pressure on women in particular to be perfect in so many ways, in how they look, you know, how they parent, if they even become parents, you know, how they perform at work. And, you know, there's even more pressure on women to be perfect. And so much of that is from the media. And ignoring some of that, you know, pushing back on something that on some of that is really important. But understanding, I think, the self-reflection piece is what is so helpful for people, is to look at yourself and say, what are my strengths? What am I really good at? And what are some areas that I'm just not very good at? I mean, I have lots of areas that I'm not good at, and some of them I want to work on. You know, I want to be a better communicator at all times, but some of them I don't really care to work on. I don't really think it would be important for me to be a better baseball player. You know, I'm not a good baseball player. I don't really think that that's something I need to deal with, right? So looking at some of the things that you do well, right, and some of the things that you don't do as well, and acknowledging that it's okay not to be able to do everything well, and looking around you and hearing stories from people who are more experienced and listening to their stories about how they're not perfect either. I mean, I see the most successful leaders, I mean, in fact, all successful leaders have all made a lot of mistakes, and the ones who are willing to talk about those mistakes are some of the best leaders I know, because they're authentic. And they've acknowledged, you know, where their shortcomings are, where they learned from their mistakes, and how it made them stronger along the way. So seeking out people who have that experience, who can help you understand what you get from those shortcomings or those mistakes that you make, and acknowledging them in yourself is, you know, a great beginning.
Well, and I know you're a leadership coach, and I could spend hours talking about your book, which is fabulous, again, because I'm halfway through it, and I'm going, oh, this is such good stuff. I wish I would have had some of this when I was younger, right? But on the work that you do for companies and corporations, you know, can you just share a little bit what, you know, a recent project, don't have to say the name of a company, but when, you know, how do you tie in, or do you tie in your book with what you do in corporate America and helping develop leaders, and especially teaching young women to be successful leaders? Does it tie in to what you do? And can you describe a little bit about the work you do with companies?
Yeah, sure. So I deal with a lot of high-level people as well when I do coaching, because that's largely where corporations put their financial budgets to play, you know, in helping out people who have a higher impact in the organization. And they often are dealing with these kind of concerns as well. So I help them deal with the generational issues and the team building and putting in place plans for them to do that. I also do workshops for managers and dealing with different generations, and help them learn how to coach their employees as well. That's another thing that I do. I did one recently at an organization where they employ a lot of new graduates, for example, and help bring them up to onboard them and learn how to manage them effectively. So it comes up in, you know, just dealing with people and the issues that they're dealing with in my coaching, but also in putting together workshops for the managers usually, and sometimes for the millennials themselves.
Well, and if we can stay on females, you know, for just we've only got a few minutes left, which, again, I always crack up how fast our radio show goes, but what are some of the things you hear most with managers about what female millennials and professionals are lacking when they first come in, or when you're brought in to serve, I guess, more? You know, what are they frustrated with the most as it relates specifically to women and potential female leaders?
You know, it's interesting. I don't hear as many complaints about females specifically. What I hear about women millennials is that they are a lot more assertive in their development than previous generations of women who were sort of raised to be more passive. And so that's actually
cool.
A strength of...
I like
yeah,
that,
it's a
yeah.
For millennials. You know, and there's some recent research that shows that they're kind of surpassing Gen X women because they weren't taught to get out there and demand more. And millennial women haven't been taught to be more submissive and all, or wait for the raise. They've been taught to go after it. So that is a positive, but the flip side of that is with women and men in that generation of having their expectations too high and wanting to jump ahead and ask for more than is reasonable for the skills and experience that they have. So being too assertive on that, and you know, the entitlement word gets used sometimes, but expecting too much too fast, I think, would be the challenge.
Well, and that's just the final thing. I mean, what do you see as maybe two things that if you could say to every company and manager out there, you know, and how to get better results in working with millennials? What would be, this would be our final kind of leave on a high note, but I love what I heard about women being more assertive. That's great for a new generation. What would be two suggestions, you know, or tips that you would leave us with as far as what companies can do to maybe, you know, get better, you know, engagement with millennials and get better results and make that relationship for those generations just a little more in sync?
Well, millennials love to develop. So helping them be better at what they do, it would be very enticing for your millennials. And I would say building the resilience factor, helping them learn how to make mistakes and be stronger as a result of that, and therefore take risks to be more creative and, you know, do things in a different way than they're used to, would be one thing. Another one is, like you said, the communication skills and helping them develop their communication skills. And I would say that the best way to work with millennials and in general with people is to coach them and help them learn on their own how they need to develop these skills and the type of decisions they need to make, rather than doing it for them, rather than, you know, bowing to their demands. Push back and say, no, 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 you need to think this through, and I'll help you think it through. I'll help ask the right questions that you need. I'll help you think through the kind of communication that you need to have with this person, and really be there as a coach rather than somebody who will do it for them.
Pretty good stuff. Oh, my gosh, I want to have you back on the show. And, Joni, in case anybody wants to read you and they want to raise their hand and go, okay, I'm having this issue at my company, it's like, how would you like people to get in touch with you? Do you want to share on your website or how people can get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, my website is flexibleworksolutions.com. That's my consulting firm. And you can also find me on flyingwithout.com. The book website has my contact information as well. So those are the two places to go.
I love them all. I can't thank you enough for being our leading lady today. I want to recommend to all of our listeners again, get Flying Without a Helicopter, How to Prepare Young People for Work in Life, and go to her website, to Joni's website, flexibleworksolutions.com. So, Joni, thank you. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners because we're going to be back here again. We're here every Monday at 9 a.m., Fridays at 2 p.m., and on Monday, I want to share, our leading lady is going to be Suzanne Mankowski, and she is the Director of Human Resources for Luna Grill Restaurant, a really nice restaurant out here in Southern California. And our topic is going to be No One Can Whistle a Symphony, It Takes a Whole Orchestra to Play It, which I am really thinking that's a great topic. So I hope you'll listen in. We always enjoy sharing information with you as women. And as I always like to say, please, as a professional woman or a woman in business, take a moment, help out as I have. It's from a Tim McGraw song, which is Humble and Kind, which is Help the Next One in Line. So have a great weekend, and we'll catch you on the next show. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.